Republican Senator Rick Gudix of Fond du Lac has represented the 18th Senate District for 4 years, and Senator Gudix has decided to not seek re-election. He'll be returning to the private sector. Senator, thanks for talking to Wisconsin Eye. Good morning.
Good morning, yeah.
There are most people, they fight hard to come to the legislature, and they like to stay. And you've made a decision, one term is enough. Why, sir?
Well, first of all, I come from the private sector. Everybody knows that. You know, manufacturing has been in my blood for, 27 years. And, I always knew that this wouldn't be a career move for me. I knew that going in. I had actually planned on 8 years, two terms, and then I would go back. And, given some circumstances and a decision that came my way or an opportunity that came my way, I decided to go back after this first session.
So you're going to go back to the company that you worked for prior to...
That's correct. I'm actually back there now.
You're back there now.
Sure, yeah.
Well, is it a matter of you being more comfortable in the private sector than the political sector? But you were mayor of Mayville.
Yes.
Then you were on the Mayville population, 5,000.
Right.
Then you were on the Fond du Lac Council from 2009 to 2012.
Correct.
Did both those nonpartisan jobs prepare you for the rough and tumble?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it prepared me in a way where you got comfortable dealing with the public. Coming into a job like this totally cold would have been near impossible because mm-hmm. you just don't know what to expect. I kind of had some foresight as to what I was getting into when I ran for this position. The local level is a level where everything happens, right? That's where it's at its grassroots. That's where, everything is fun. You get to this level here and, why am I going back to the private sector? Probably because it makes more sense back in the private sector. There's days down here where you kind of walk around going, what is going on down here, So, let's just say my comfort level was better back in the private sector. And, the opportunity came my way. I didn't seek it. So I decided to make the change, and I knew that opportunity wouldn't be there when I wanted to leave, so I made the decision to leave.
Where are there some days, as you just alluded to in the Senate, when you go, why is this happening? What's the partisanship? I mean, tell me about the frustrations.
Here's one of the frustrations. People out there in the public, they see the headlines in the press about how nobody gets along down here, right? Probably one of the farthest things from the truth, because believe it or not, outside of the Senate chambers, I can tell you that the Democratic senators are the nicest people around. I mean, they really are. I mean, you can talk about fishing and hunting and grandkids and kids, and you can carry a conversation for a half hour, it's just like they're one of us or we're one of them. But something changes when you get inside that chamber. It's literally like when you walk in that chamber, there's a switch that flips. And it's kind of like, it's like showtime, And it's not reality, To me, anyway, it wasn't reality because it's like, man, I just talked to this person about fishing and their grandkids and going on vacation, and now they're lambasting me over a bill
right.
just because we're in the chambers and the cameras are on. So believe it or not, there's a lot more camaraderie that happens down here than what the public actually sees, and that's actually a good thing. I just wish the people could see that out in the state a little more often, publicly. I made some good friends down here. It was very, very interesting. There's a very diverse group of individuals within the state Senate, and everybody had something to contribute.
Well, why is it that switch is flipped, and it's all partisanship, it's all my way or the highway, when the Senate is formally in session, once that gavel bangs, why?
Well, everybody, everybody's got their base they have to deal with, right? So you have to please your base. So that's just my opinion, by the way. But I mean, there's a lot of times, the majority of the bills by far are bipartisan bills. Mm-hmm. I mean, that you've always got your 10% every session where you've got huge differences or where you try and differentiate yourself from one or the other. But for the most part, everybody gets along pretty well down here.
What bills are you proudest of getting passed or the area that you specialized in? Now, I noticed you have part of the mine.
Yeah.
You took a deep interest in the In the new mining law.
I did. Actually, what we've got here is a, this is actually a piece of ore from the Pinoki Hills up in the area where they were going to have the mine. Representative Schra, who's one of my representatives in the Fond du Lac, or within my district, he's from Oshkosh. Actually, him and I went up after we got elected. I hadn't even been in inaugurated yet.
You weren't sworn in.
We went up there. We weren't sworn in. We went up there because I wanted to see firsthand, what this was all about. And because I knew I'd be jumping heads first right into the mine issue.
Absolutely.
When I got in there. Because that was part of the election, you remember, that Senator King at the time was totally opposed to the mine, and I'm pro-business. I love the fact that we would have a mine up there. So I wanted to view this. So, typically when you're mining ore, you go down several hundred feet to get to the ore, and actually on that hill, that whole ridge, which is miles and miles long, this ore is laying right on top. I mean, it was amazing to see this. So I grabbed a couple pieces to bring here to my office just to show and demonstrate. But it was an issue I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about anything we can do to drive economic development, create jobs, move this state forward. But that was one of those issues where we had a hard line, right? You had this group here, and you weren't going to change their mind, and you had this group here, and they weren't going to change their mind.
Right.
I sided with the fact that we needed this mine, we needed the jobs, and unfortunately, too many roadblocks were put in place along the way that just made it economically not feasible to do the mine.
Who put those roadblocks in place?
Well, the locals had a lot to do with that, I believe.
Okay.
There was a lot of grassroots efforts on both sides for and against.
Do you think the DNR was a fair party in the whole transaction?
I can't make a fair determination on that. I have my suspicions, but I can't substantiate that. But there's good people that work throughout the organizations here in state government, so it'd be unfair for me to label them one way or the other.
Okay, so you must be disappointed when Gibik pulled out of that mine project. Do you think there will ever be a mine on that site, Senator?
I do. I think that, once, economic conditions get better and the need for ore gets greater, China kind of watered down the market for many years here, and, I think at some point there's going to be another industrial revolution happening in a whole modern sense. And I think that this ore will be mined someday.
You think the concerns about pollution of groundwater and the Bad River concerns were overblown?
Yeah, they were. And here's what I know about this issue. There's two types of ore that are up there. There's magnetite and there's hematite. Magnetite's what you're seeing here. It's got the magnetic qualities. It's just nothing but a crushing operation and a rinsing operation. The other type of mining, which I don't even know if I would have went along with, is mining hematite, which is a chemical process. That one there is far more riskier than this operation would have been. So do I personally think that there was an issue for contamination of our surface water? No, I don't believe that.
Keep this as a before, and then you also keep a sample of an after.
Yeah, this
do you
is,
want to explain that?
Yeah, this is actually what, these are little pellets in here, and they've got a little powder residue on there that helps in the blasting process, the furnace process. So this is actually what would have been the byproduct coming out of the...
So this would have been turned
this
into that?
This would have been turned into this. This is what actually would have been... from my understanding, this would have been going down the railroads in ore cars. This is what would have gone to, Pennsylvania or wherever they do the blasting and making of the carbon steel metal.
Okay. Your decision, was it a frustration with politics, or were you? Is it a financial sacrifice for you to get paid only $51,000 a year?
That was a sacrifice. To get paid the $49,000 when I came in. By the way. But you know what? I wanted to do it. I really believe that everybody should have the opportunity at some point in their life to serve at a government or a local level or any kind of a level, whether it's a school board, a county board. I talk to kids all the time, and one thing I tell them is, don't ever give up an opportunity to help your community. Whether it's, working on a United Way drive or helping out at a food drive. I mean, it's rewarding. It really is. It's rewarding to do it. And for me, it was a sacrifice. It was a planned sacrifice, like I said, I always intended on going back to the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that old yet, although some mornings I feel like I am, but, I still have a lot to offer back in the private sector, and it's kind of my passion, to be honest with you.
What type of a sacrifice did your family? You're married with a couple children.
That's correct.
what type of a sacrifice is it to them when you're in the Capitol and driving back and forth, sir?
Yeah, it was. It was a sacrifice for the family, you know, and there were things that I wish I would have done better in communicating and knowing those sacrifices up front. You know, the election was a tough election. I mean, you know.
Yes, you won by how many hundred votes?
600 votes, exactly.
600 votes.
Yeah, 600 votes. And, you know, you begin to realize that, they tend to want to market you in a way that's not favorable, if you know what I mean. I mean, I found out things about myself on those TV commercials I had never known about myself simply because they weren't true. But, you know, that's what you get into. That's the name of the game. And you know that going in. But, you know, yeah, so my family is, doing well today. And, things are good.
What's, you have how many pens from bill signings?
Yeah, 34.
34. What are you going to do with these?
You know, I'm going to try and get them framed some way, shape, or form. I'm going to get them
framed. These are pens from Governor Walker's bill signings.
That's correct. Yes.
34. That might be a record. You're going to try to frame those?
I'm going to try and get those framed in some way, shape. I don't know how I'm going to do that yet, but, and believe me, for every one of these pens, there was a lot of work went into it. My staff, Tim, Sean, Lance, Angela before she left, top-notch staff. I mean, I couldn't have asked for better staff. I was blessed with a good staff. Very hardworking. We navigated our way through a lot of, key issues and important issues for my district. And, my staff had everything to do with getting that accomplished. But, so I'm going to try and do something with these pens. I'm not going to put them next to the phone and take notes. I work too hard for that. So.
Which bill are you proudest of that you got passed as a lead sponsor?
You know, my favorite bill, the best bill that I think is doing the best for the state of Wisconsin is the Wisconsin Fast Forward legislation.
Okay, talk about why that was a big change.
Yeah, it was my first bill. It's actually Act 9, 2013. Mm-hmm. That was a bill that actually kind of reset the stage on how we get people ready for the workforce, how we create partnerships to get people ready for the workforce, how we connect employers and employees for potential jobs. It had the LMIS system, Labor Management Information System. That was something that's new. You can actually go on that website today through DWD, and you can put your information in, and it will automatically do some searches for you to try and fit you up with jobs. I mean, this is stuff that didn't happen before we had this fast-forward legislation. Grant programs, funding programs for people who are needing skills to get into the workforce, for people who are disabled. There's incentives for hiring people with disabilities who is just that's a huge untapped market for employers out there. We just have to, make the connections, and that's what this bill was all about. It was really it was a totally bipartisan effort. I was proud to work with some Democrats on this bill as well. This is my first bill. It's probably my one signature bill, I could say, that I worked hard to get.
Does your own firm that you've gone back to, does it have trouble finding skilled workers, Senator?
Right now, time's a little slow for part of that sector. But, it's a welding industry.
Welding.
And welders are in great demand.
Okay.
And, it's not that you don't have the actual bodies that could perform that work. It's that you have... parents nowadays all want their kids to go to a four-year college. I mean, that's kind of the end thing. It's been that way for a number of years. And, you don't necessarily have to have a four-year degree to go in and have yourself a career and make good money at that. I mean, a lot of businesses nowadays are kind of overlooking the four-year degree, and they're actually looking for that associate degree or that boot camp certificate. And a lot of that is what ties into the Wisconsin Fast Forward grant program is giving grants to tech colleges and partnering with businesses with those grants to try and make the connections to get people to work.
The 18th district has always intrigued me because I think it has more prison inmates than any other Senate district.
It does actually.
It's Waupun, Oshkosh.
Yeah, Waupun, Oshkosh, Tichita.
Tichita.
Yeah, and then you got the minimum security Burke Center, and then you've got. Right up on the northern district, north of my district, you got DAC up there, Winnebago.
So you hear from some prison guards. What are they saying? How's morale in the prisons? Because the reason is I've seen Senator Urbanbach's numbers on the number of vacancies. So how's morale in the prisons in the 18th?
You know, Representative Schrae and Representative Thiesfeldt and myself, you know, we did a lot of listening with the prison guards themselves. You know, I like to say I had we had a mutual respect for one another. You know, what's their morale like? You know, I think that they want things to go back to the way they were, but mm-hmm. most of the people that were in that fight back in 2011, I mean, most of those people had retired now or, you know, have moved on simply because they couldn't deal with the fact that, you know, that you know, process had been, you know, eliminated. So, you know, there's a bill we just passed here recently, the drone bill, that came from a prison guard in Waupun.
Right.
You know, he had noticed that there was an incident in Ohio where they were dropping contraband over the wall, and you know, he says, "Hey, can we make these a no-fly zone here in Wisconsin?" I said, "Yeah, absolutely." So Representative Schrae and I got together, we created a bill, and we got that done. I attended a lot of listening sessions, you know, communication sessions within the prison system in Waupun. I always made myself available. You know, whether we agreed or disagreed on an issue, I always made myself available.
Let's talk about some recent issues. Was $250 million in public funds for the new Bucks Arena a tough sell in the 18th,
no.
Senator?
No.
No,
not
how,
at all.
How did you tell your constituents we need this?
I had very little resistance on that issue. And I'll tell you why, because I think what you realize up in my district, it's a group of hardworking individuals who understand the economics of how the state and the federal government run. They realize that if you were to lose the Bucks in Milwaukee, and we all talk about, you know, Milwaukee kind of drives a lot of the policy decision making. It has a big influence on the budget every 2 years. You know, if you were to have the Bucks leave Milwaukee with all of the ancillary, you know, ancillary businesses and the ancillary support that support the Bucks, if that was to just up and leave Milwaukee, it would have been devastating for the city of Milwaukee. And I hate to you know, talk like I'm from Milwaukee, but I understand the business and the economics of the situation. So for me, I got very little resistance, very little at all, simply because I sold it on the fact that, you know, if we lose the Bucks and Milwaukee falls into hard times because of this hole that was created, mm-hmm. you know, the rest of the state's going to need to pick that up. You know, in some way, shape, or form, we're going to have to do something to help out Milwaukee. We just can't let Milwaukee fail. So, you know, to inject $80 million of state money, you know, not including the county money that you know, is going in that, but the state money, the money that would affect my constituents. When you look at the numbers, it's really a drop in the bucket. You know, I look at it as a small investment from the people in the district, 18th district, to keep that entity there, to keep the state of Wisconsin moving forward. So it was very a very easy sell for myself.
What about the $250 million cut, albeit over 2 years, in state aid to the UW system? Because you've got Oshkosh, you've got two-year colleges, you've got extensions. Was that a tougher sell?
Yeah, you know, there was a little more activity on that front. But, you know, understand, I come from private business. And, you know, when I look at a lot of government agencies and how they're run, you know, sometimes things don't make sense to me because, you know, you tend to see a top-heavy ship in some cases. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, when Chancellor Wells was in UW-Oshkosh when I came on board, and he has since retired, and Chancellor Wells and I had a great relationship, very mutual respect for one another, talked all the time, and then we got Chancellor Leavitt. Chancellor Leavitt came from, I believe, Georgia. Chancellor Leavitt and I had these discussions during this time, you know, and you know, I simply sat down with the chancellor, you know, one to one, and I just said, you know, you got to figure this out. You know, this isn't going to go away, whether it's 250 or it's 200 or it's 175.
The governor, I think, originally recommended 300 over 2 years.
Something is coming, so you got to sit down and figure this out. You know, and so we talked about a number of things, and I said, you know, just take your hat and just change it to a private sector hat, and you're running a business, you know, a for-profit business. How would you change things? You know, and it wasn't because of my discussion. He's a very in-tune chancellor when it comes to things like this. I just love the guy. I think he's doing a great job. He figured this out. I mean, yeah, there's some things he had to do, and there's some things that are going to be a little painful for him and his college, but, you know, the difference is with him is he took this as a challenge to make things better and to change the way they were doing business. Now, maybe he gets a free pass in a way because he was new, mm-hmm. right? So you're not ingrained in that for 10, 15 years.
You haven't been a part of the system.
Right. So, but he has really, you know, tried to embrace this the best he could, and he's doing some pretty creative things to make this work. And as a matter of fact, him and I just had lunch about a month ago, and he caught me up on where he's at and how things are going. And, you know, for the most part, he's making things work just fine. So,
the highways are so critical to the Fox Valley that you've represented for 4 years. This transportation funding impasse, if it were up to you, if you could wave a wand, how would you pay for the transportation needs of the future, Senator?
There is no secret. I was vocal on this, okay? There was like two or three of the Republican senators who wanted to do a gas tax increase.
Yes.
And maybe a small increase in registration. Again, you know, put your business hat on. You can't hide the fact that we're behind in our funding for transportation. And you don't get to get a magic wand and just wave it and say it's going to go away, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes you got to be realistic. And for me, coming out as a Republican senator saying I want to raise gas taxes by 7 cents a gallon, and I want to raise registration fee by $25, and that's going to get us probably two-thirds of where we need to be over the next number of years, you know, I took a little bit of heat for that.
You were willing to
Absolutely.
Back both of those.
Absolutely.
And how do you feel about a governor of your party saying, neither of those tax increases, sir?
We had a discussion on that. And, you know, he told me where he was at with it. I told him where I was at with it. And we mutually decided to walk away disagreeing on the issue. But utmost respect for our governor, and he's doing what he thinks is right for the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, ultimately I backed the decision not to do anything because I simply wasn't going to get anything done the other way. So, you know, we move forward. You can't sit and dig a hole and jump in. So.
But in the next biennium, one out of every $4 or $5 will go just to pay the debt
Absolutely.
Service.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Run the numbers. It gets worse.
Yes,
every biennium, it gets worse.
Yes, it
Sooner
does.
Or later, you got to deal with this.
If you were coming back, what would be your top priority in the next budget?
Economic development.
Okay.
It's my passion. You know, Senator Fitzgerald put me in charge of the Economic Development Committee down here the last two sessions. It is absolutely my passion coming from the local level and having an understanding of the private sector. You know, we really did some great things on the economic front the first 2 years I was here. And, you know, in my opinion, I think we fell a little bit short the last 2 years. You know, there's things we could have done that we didn't do. There was a different agenda. But, you know, economic development is actually the engine that drives this state. And, you know, once you start forgetting about that, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot of programs that we did, like I said, that are in play all the time going forward, but there's just so much more that we could have did. You know, we even went around and we did a 5-stop tour throughout the states, or throughout the state, 5 different regions of the state. Heard firsthand from economic development people, businesses, education entities. What do you need? What are you looking for? What's going on in your particular region? And we came back with a series of bills, and I don't remember one of them passing, to be honest with you.
Well, but what's been the problem with WEDIC? WEDIC has made some bad choices. It's a new agency, but you must have been surprised at some of the things that the audit and the reports have disclosed. Some of the loans, there was a lack of due diligence. People didn't comply when they applied for money. What's been WEDIC's problem?
Well, you know, I'm on the board for WEDIC. I've been on the board for the last three years, and I'll be 4 years when I'm done. But, you know, we could go into a long dialogue about WEDIC and what's actually going on there. And
how broken
how
is
things
it?
Are. It's not that broke.
Does it need to be fixed?
It doesn't. You know what? Hiring our new CEO there is probably one of the best things that we did. Having Dan Aarons being in charge
chair.
Of the board instead
yes.
of the governor.
Yes.
Two major positive things that have happened that are really going to make that agency move in the right direction. So I am not worried about WEDIC. There are a lot of things that you're talking about and the press has talked about in the past that were things that happened 3 and 4 years ago. And, you know, that you just keep spinning the spin, right? I'd like to talk about...
Are those things not happening now at WEDIC as a board member?
No. There's cleanup being done at WEDIC yet on a small scale of things that had happened in the past, and that's going to continue.
Okay.
And what they're doing is they're taking all of the all of the recommendations from LEB audit, and they're going through and they're instituting all of this stuff, and they are finding a couple things here and here, there yet. But I think you're going to get another year down the road here, and I think we're going to get a lot better in WEDC. One of the things that I'll tell you, we went around the state, like I said, five different stops. There wasn't one of those stops where anybody said you should get rid of weeding. As a matter of fact, they told us, get the revolving loan fund back in place. We need the revolving loan fund. You cut our knees off at the economic local level. So we had a bill came out for that, Alberta Darling and I. Alberta, by the way, has been great on economic development issues. She's a champion. Nothing got done with that either. So some things I wish would have gotten done that didn't get done.
Is being a legislator a full-time job, Senator?
You know, they call it a part-time job, but it's actually more of a full-time job than it is, right? The only time you've got any downtime is when session's over. But yeah. I'll tell you what, on a daily basis, if you really put your heart and soul into being a servant of your district, mm-hmm. you're going to be busy every day. Yeah. And that's basically what happened with me. You know, I'm either all in or I'm all out, and I'm always all in. I came to Madison basically 3 days a week. Mondays and Fridays I was back in the district, and I had stuff planned on the weekends. You know, there's always somebody, you know, when you come out there and you're very, you're very in tune with the public, and you're very,
very visible.
Very visible, and you're in tune with what's going on. You like doing speaking. You know, all of a sudden you got all these organizations that are like, hey, Senator Griss will come in. You get to do a lot of that, and I enjoyed that. That's actually the best part. You know, the days that I had to drive to the Capitol were probably the worst days. The days I got to stay in the district and actually meet with groups and civic groups and, you know, go to the UW and do different things, those were the fun times. I mean, that's just absolutely fun.
Should it pay more than $51,000?
You know, that's a tough question. You know, should it pay more than that? When you look at other states and what they do, we're actually on the higher end of where everybody else is.
Okay.
And how they do their sessions and how they do their state government. But I'll tell you what, if you broke that $51,000 down into hours put in, you're only making $10-$15 an hour at the end of the day. I mean, you're always doing something. You're either on the phone answering emails, talking to people, down here, working doors and talking and getting deals done. And so there's a lot goes into it.
Because of your position as a Republican senator, you're a leader of the state party. You've been watching the presidential campaign unfold.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the likely nominee, Mr. Trump?
Well, I don't know if people are going to start throwing tomatoes at my garage door, but I'm more so on the Trump bandwagon than I am anywhere else.
You are.
Yeah, I was totally behind Governor Walker when he was running.
Yes.
I think Governor Walker would have and could have made a very nice president for this country.
Okay.
But I got to tell you, when you start looking at the pool of candidates we've got, I look at the mess that's been going on in Washington, and I blame both parties. I mean, there's just this unwillingness to want to work together, get anything done. There's always this stalemate going on down there, and it just seems like sometimes the president has no option but to do an executive order, which I hate, and I don't agree with 99% of his executive orders, but, the thing is, you get the establishment people running for president, and I'm looking at, what have you actually got done, and I'm not seeing a lot that they've got done, and here I got this business guy coming in there who I kind of like business people myself. And
yes. You are one.
Because I am one, so I'm kind of thinking to myself, God, what could this guy do? Yeah. What if we gave him 4 years? What could he do?
Okay.
And it just seems like, good or bad, he said some things that a lot of people had on their mind, which is good or which is bad. And he's brought a lot of issues up that it seems like the establishment people were afraid to talk about. And it just makes me wonder, could this be a turning point in our nation's history?
You sound like you voted for him in the presidential primary.
I won't say who I voted for, but
you like Mr. Trump.
I don't dislike him.
Okay.
I think that he's bringing some good discussion to this debate. I'd be happy with either one of the three that are running right now. I'd vote for either one of those three on the Republican side. But you just kind of listen to what they're talking about, and sometimes we don't always come across the way we should. But I think the message, if you start peeling back the layers, you get to the message, and you got to wonder, could this be something that could work?
Just a couple more questions. What intrigues me about the 18th is When you leave in January, the 18th district will have had five senators in 7 years. And one of the reasons is, it's the top priority of Senate Democrats to take out a Republican and elect a Democrat in November. Is your party going to hold your seat?
I believe they have the ability to hold the seat, yes. Yes. It's a tough district.
It is.
It's a tough district, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, because of that tough district, you know, there's issues that I just didn't get out in front of.
Right.
Like other senators had the ability to do.
Right.
You know, I had to remember that I have a different base in parts of my district. And I never tried to offend anybody. You know, I always listened to everybody, whether I agreed or not. And in some cases, I would try and, you know, make the best of the two discussions that were going on within my district and try and get to an even keel.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of people comment positively on my ability to try and get something done. I got a lot of bills done for the city of Oshkosh, to be honest with you. You know, I really, before I ran in 2012, you know, I'd gone to Oshkosh a number of times, but I never really walked around and talked to anybody or got to know anybody up there. And once I did, I really started, you know, understanding, you know, what makes Oshkosh different than the rest of the district, because that's really where the central part of where the party lines start to blur. But I got to tell you, I love Oshkosh. It's a great community. I mean, really, they have a lot of things going good for them up there. They've got a good leadership team up there in the city of Oshkosh, and I just kind of gelled with them, and you know, they weren't afraid to bring me issues. I even worked with Representative Hintz on a few issues up in Oshkosh that we happened to get done together. Sometimes we brought in Representative Schrock because he represents a portion of that outer line of Oshkosh there, which you call Oshkosh. We got the ability to get a lot of things done up there, and I'm really, really happy with what we were able to get done, and you know, I have the utmost respect for all the different groups of people that are in district 18.
Was it your idea that the bill passed that a county executive could not also serve in the ledge, and which directly played a role in the debate in the re-election in the 18th?
Are you asking, was that my decision?
Yes.
No, I had no idea that was coming.
Oh, you didn't?
No. You know,
okay.
When I seen that get introduced, I was like, holy man, what's going on here? You know?
Really?
But, I signed on to the bill. I was on the bill. That's public record. But, the bill is what it is. You know, the legislature went along with the bill, and we passed the bill.
The rumors were that the polls show that Democrat that was aimed at was doing pretty well in terms of winning in November. Do you think that's true?
I don't know. You know, I'm being honest with you here. I've kind of disconnected myself from the election that's going on.
Okay, you have.
I have. I just don't want to get involved in that.
Okay.
I've got a job to do to keep this district moving forward, and that's what I'm going to continue to do until January. I guess if you looked at the numbers, I don't know what they would tell you, but if that's what they're saying, that's fine. I actually would have loved to run against Mark Harris, because I know Mark Harris, and I know what he's done, and I know his game plan. It's not a secret. He really wasn't a fan of mine, and I'm not a fan of his. We didn't get together on the numbers. Mark's a numbers driven guy, and
mm-hmm.
His numbers a lot of times didn't coincide with what I had for information on. But nonetheless, Winnebago County is in District 18, and I respect that, and I did everything I could to serve the people of the entire district.
Maybe a final question. What's going to be your advice to your successor, the next senator from the 18th district, sir?
Just listen to everybody. You know, pay attention to what's going on. Listen to everybody. Take it to heart. You know, try and be this cohesive senator that district needs. You got to be cohesive. You've got to be able to work together to get things done. This isn't another district that's running a 68% district. I mean, this is a 50-50 district, and you've got to make sure that you're going into this race. You've got to realize that you've got to be able to sometimes walk that line and try and get things done from both directions to make sure that you're moving forward. Because if you're not working that line,
mm-hmm.
your district loses out because you don't get things done down here, and that's unfortunate. So. There's a lot down here that we got done, and I'm proud to have served, and enjoyed the time I had down here.
You're going back to the private sector? Do you see yourself running for political office again?
No.
No.
No, you know, never say never.
Never say never,
you know. But no, I mean, I've done that. You know, collectively, I've got 15 years of government under my belt, and you know, I'm kind of one of these individuals that feels that, you know, these types of things are you know, you're really a servant, and you know, I was a servant leader here. Everybody should have an opportunity to do this. So for 15 years being in local government and state government is enough. There's a lot of people out there with a lot of different ideas and good ideas, and they should have the opportunity to do so too.
Senator Rick Gudex, thank you so much
thank
for
you
your talking
much.
To Wisconsin
Appreciate
and I. And good luck with the next chapter of your life.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.